Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
How about that Vive? Everybody got a Vive? Raise your hand if you ordered a Vive.
You guys ordered the Vive?
Made a little bit.
You did? That's awesome.
Brian tweeted, which I almost suspect was him hashtag deep viral marketing the Vive, because he tweets this link that just says, oh my God, Vive just halted sales. And I'm like, I get sent into this panic. I'm like, oh my God, I waited too long. Ashley and I have been talking about ordering it. And I'm like, oh my God. So click on that link.
And then the first thing it says is update. Yes. When you click on the article, go to the article. The article says, update, they're selling again.
So we're scrolling down. The first update, like confirmed by HEC on Twitter, Vive orders have resumed, right? So Brian just tweets that out, and even though I read that, my adrenaline's running so high from just seeing this idea of like, oh no, they oversold them, now I won't be able to get one for a year, and all my friends have them, and oh my God, this is terrible. And so Ashley and I have been talking about it, and we're like, we gotta pull the trigger right now. And
I am so happy to hear that, because this is exactly the scenario that I was suspecting / hoping was the case when I saw that you tweeted out that you were in the club.
So we run to the computer and we're running the diagnostic that they have to make sure that it's legit enough to run all the Vive games and everything, and we get our clean bill of health, and then we're like, all right, go, do it, buy the Vive, buy it now. And so now we're like making plans. We're gonna rip out. We're gonna take down all the stuff that we had for our Jury Moore set and put. And light a green screen there so we can stream the Vive games, which of course means now we'll probably need another. We probably want to get another camera, and so I don't know. It's everything.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, because I thought through, it's like, do I want to be the a-hole to bring up the Vive in front of Andrew, who was the first of us to experience it and the original prophet of the Vive and the bringer of the good news. And I was thinking about it. It's like both Justin and I are in unbalanced situations in that because we both have streaming studio setups, like we already have the initial $3,000 investment, that the hidden $3,000 cost of the Vive, which is you have to have a super high end gaming or streaming PC.
Yeah. So. I love the Vive. Love the Vive. And maybe hypothetically being a person that maybe already threw a deposit down on a Tesla or something like that, I'm not immune to, you know, hype and getting into something as soon as you can. The deciding factor for me on the Vive was I cannot justify the time. It was just the – like I have an Oculus Rift that I don't even use, you know. That's actually sitting at a VFX house because I was working on a project with them. I'm like, oh, you guys can borrow this. And that's the extent of it. That's the end of it. It was like, oh, this is kind of cool. This is neat, whatever. But I haven't felt that call. I've got a closet full of all sorts of like crazy weird VR stuff. I've got like three different like 360 degree capture cameras. So I have a very low resistance to getting something really, really, really cool. But for me, it came down to I looked at it and I'm like, I love this. This is really cool. I in the next 6 months or 7 months or so, I can't justify the time to do it.
Yeah, well, and that's the other unfair thing is both Justin and I have the ability to somehow, in that bizarre calculus of our clockwork that we call a brain, call this work.
It's work. And there's another thing too.
Work.
Here's the
part of the calculus is for us, and this was very much an us thing because Ashley is the one who bought it, and Ashley is going to be the one who on her channel and on my channel will be able to stream it. So yeah. This was very much an investment kind of for the Ashley Justin Twitch streaming kind of empire in general. But I think it's something that is very exciting. And what I found most exciting about it is for the first time with VR, you see a bit of a mainstream-esque kind of community building around it.
Right. And
it
but let me throw a wrinkle into your plans, because this was the other thing that I had wind of and I hadn't discussed here, begun, the VR wars have begun, so you know who's the next player that's going to theoretically be jumping in next week with a consumer VR device?
Who's that?
We have a big convention this week. Google I/O. Rumor is they're taking the whole. They've shifted entire division. One of the guys in charge of product is now in charge of it. They're going to come out with a standalone. It's Android VR, an entire full unit that's going to be a. They want to make a big jump into it, and they're heavily capitalized and all that. And so it was like, man, like I kind of want to wait and see what that's going to be because they have their own room sensing technology. They have their own ability to sort of, you know, map the room around you and do that without all of the little dongles and stuff. Like, Vive is the best experience by far I've done. And I don't know if the standalone thing will be even nearly as powerful as the Vive, but it's another platform that they're going to throw.
Can I tell you what's kind of almost awesome about this? Because when I was in high school, you know, you were faced with a decision, and I assume it was the same for you guys if you got a gaming console when you were young. It's like Santa could only bring one of the two, and you had to really think hard about which one you got, because this was it. And then you did. And then, you know, you become an adult, and you're like, PlayStation, Xbox, you know, I'll get around to getting them both, whatever. It's kind of – the price tag on these are so high that and you have to think about your lifestyle and the kind of stories that they're doing, where I find myself in that same place where it's like, I'm picking a side, man. You know, hey, man, I'm going to die on this hill that I want the ability to step 2 feet in either direction when I play my games, and I'm going to argue on the playground against those Oculus nerds who are stuck in their chair facing forwards. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and what is exciting about the Vive, and specifically Vive for us as a streaming proposition, is, you know, it's already going to be running through the computer, through Steam. You can very easily use... you know, the same kind of capture methods that we can to stream it, that there's already kind of a visual language that's popping up for what that looks like. So that is something that is very exciting. However, I'm all in on the Google device, because, you know, as Andrew and I have talked there, I think that what the secret sauce of what makes Vive very interesting right now is A, the ability to be room sensing, and B, the power. Now, the Google device might not have the power, but if it has the more intuitive room sensing elements to it,
and it's untethered.
Better room sensing elements to it, then I think it very much can be a super rad thing. Now, I don't know.
It's untethered. That's the thing that excites me, is that you're not plugged into a computer.
Now, I don't know whether or not it's going that presents its own challenges to stream it.
That's one of the weird parts is the Vive gets dinged, and legitimately, these are legitimate dings, is that you need an insanely powerful PC to do it. The setup is extremely difficult, or challenging, and complicated.
It's also a death trap. I mean, like, it literally, it's immersing you in a world where it is asking you and begging you and giving you every reason as possible to walk in very tight circles, while there is a gigantic cord plugged into a combined $4,000 worth of hardware.
All of that true? Also, not a problem. All in.
Vive was my game-changing VR experience, and having played with Oculus and Gear and other stuff and cardboard, and cardboard before it was cardboard, when it was the USC Media Labs little thing. I told you about the time, like, I'm making this.
Yeah.
I followed their plans, and then 2 weeks later, Google Cardboard gets announced. I'm like, oh. Having gone through all of that, Vive was the biggest leap, as you all experienced. It's the big. Everyone's like, "Oh, this is a cool Vive." You're like, "Holy cow, this is really what it's supposed to be like."
Yeah.
And it's not that it was. You weren't worried about how much time you weren't like, "Oh, you know how much you know you, people," because all the arguments, "Oh, you're not going to want to spend a lot of time in VR because it'll get boring," or fatigue or whatever. When you do the Vive, you have no concept of time because it feels very, very real. I'm stoked by where that's going. Like if I could justify the time, you know, like I was so close to just buying a high-speed gaming PC, looking up the specs and doing that, going through Amazon, doing all that, doing it, and I just like the time, you know, like the problem is like if I really like this, there goes every kind of productivity. And then the whole – and then Google, what's Google going – Google looks like they want to – Google really wants to own a hardware bad. They really, really want to own a hardware space.
And it only took them how many years? Like they should have been more serious about this forever. Like,
they were serious just in the wrong direction. I mean, they made substantial investments in stuff like Google Glass and so on. But yeah.
Well, I would as an Apple fanboy, I would say that what they've pushed the Nexus hardware to do has been amazing. I think where they've gone with Chromebooks and what they've done with a lot of stuff is that they've made a really, really solid hardware transition, and the quality in many cases is you know, equal to anything, in many respects, anything Apple does. And again, I'm a diehard Apple guy, but I will tell you that I think a lot of the hardware stuff, that's the case. And I think that for in VR, Google knows this is not a space they want to cede to Facebook. It's not a space that they want to cede to Microsoft. It's not a space that they want to cede, you know, to Vive and HTC. I think that Google is saying like, hey, we kind of got people excited with Cardboard. We need to put a lot of money into this with a consumer product. So
110%. And I think that there is a very, very, very good, I'm excited for it as a consumer device. And for us, I think the Vive was a good investment. In that, I think you are definitely going to get a lot of great. If you look at where Vive is at interactively now, in terms of what kind of programs and experiences are there, it would be kind of an upset to not see at least like a tale of 2 years of people trying to do really, really cool stuff there for that platform and through Steam. Now, that being said, I think that there is, you know, a tremendous possibility that, you know, Google or something from Apple or something else that kind of comes out can be a tremendous consumer experience beyond something that's being tethered into a computer and yada, yada, yada.
And I'll say this with Google, like there's some rumors like, well, actually they're going to do kind of their own version of Gear. It's a thing you plug your phone into or whatever. I'm going to say if they do that, they failed. I'm going to say that if they don't make a solid standalone device, I consider that a fail because it's that, hey, and you plug your phone in and you do this. It's like, now, I mean, that's come out with a really solid, you know, standalone device that, you know, because it's otherwise it's like, well, I might upgrade my phone, I might switch my phone, but, you know, yeah, charge $300 or $400 more for this thing. Make this thing really, you know, advanced. But if it's another plug your phone into it, I will declare Vive the winner for this.
Well, and again, this is the thing is like, here's what really did it for me on the Vive is, yes, all the flaws, everything you mentioned, total flaw. Weirdly, the clincher, the thing that made me believe was the first, like, pooping on it article that I read. And I just realized, oh, wait, this is the iPhone. This is iPhone Gen 1. And it's like, yeah, the Gen 1 had major problems. It was on edge. It was super freaking slow. It was super – it didn't have an app store.
Yeah, compared to now, yes, when you were judging it against – yeah. When you're saying,
yeah, we just and I talked about this the other day. When you look in the rearview mirror of history and you see every phone, you know, that till up until now, and you look back at the iPhone, like, yeah, I didn't have this. But the iPhone is fantastic. And like the version I used, the pre-release version of Vive I used, I'm like, if I had this in my living room right now, I'd be very happy.
Here we go. Instantly, Bryce pulled up an article from 2006, Why the Apple Phone Will Fail and Fail Badly. It's the Pippin all over again, they say, in 2006. It's like, I don't know. I just realized that, yes, you can wait. And both me and Justin probably should wait. But,
well, I mean, for us, I think there is this case of we both produce a tremendous amount of online content.
Yeah.
Right. We have invested a lot of time and energy into creating a portal for which people watch live content through DiamondClub.tv. It is a large part of our work day to do that. So to create another element that is fresh and exciting that we're also kind of excited about, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if I would say to anybody in a conversation about VR, I don't know if I would say to anybody, you need to buy a Vive, right? Well, because unless they were saying to me, I have a bunch of money and a high-end gaming PC, should I buy a Vive? I would say yes. But if in a cold conversation, it's a tremendous amount to ask of somebody to just go from zero to high-end gaming PC and Vive, right?
Yeah, I would argue that, like, between the experiences I've had on Oculus and Vive, I hands down recommend the Vive. But as far as the waiting, like, you always wait. Like, for me, it was, well, I can wait this week and see what Google comes out with. And if I don't like it, I can order a Vive and have it in June.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, so it's not like, oh, wait 6 months or 8 months. No, it was like, you know, wait 10 days. You know, it was just, that was, for me, it was like, nah, wait 10 days, see what happens there. And then think if I, you know, can convince myself into pulling the trigger on stuff, which unfortunately I do way too often.
Well, that concludes after VR.
So let's jump right into an email from, this is a really good question. This is for the Weird Tank. And by the way, if you have a business question, you want our advice on something, and for what it's worth, email your questions to neshcom@gmail.com. Put subject line Weird Tank, and we'll be happy to give it a shot here. And we have one from Nick. Nick writes, says, hi all. I had a question for the Weird Tank. How do you get through to the decision makers? I recently started up a photo business specialized in taking school photos. I have a few accounts, but I'm having a hard time growing. There's a big disconnect between who makes the decision to have me as a photographer and who actually buys the photos. The principal is the decision maker. The parents of the kids are actually clients, and there is a school secretary in the middle whose job it is to chase salesmen out of the office. What do you guys think would be a good way for me to get around the secretary and actually talk to the principal? And then once I'm there, how do I get them to care about what the parents want in their photos? Thanks for your help. I really appreciate it. Also, I love all the shows. Weird Things, After Things, Night Attack, Hotline Monday, Jury. And I'm sure he meant to put in there, you know, the Modern Rogue. Diamond Club, Nick. Here's a little backstory in the biz. Biz is Shub Photo South. So if you go to shubphotosouth.com, it's a spinoff of his parents' Northern California photography studio. He says his family's been in the school photo biz for 98 years. That's incredible. So I'm in the situation like this periodically. I think we all are. When you're trying to pitch something or you're trying to present something, you want to talk to the decision maker. And there's a lot of gatekeepers in the way. And any gatekeeper can either say no, push you out of the way, you know, delay you or whatever, and keep you from getting there. How do you get to that decision maker is critical. In some cases, the decision maker is happy to talk to you if you present yourself right. Sometimes they're frustrated that you were able to get through to them, and that can be the challenge. I found that one, phone is much better. Phone is, get people on the phone. Get people on the phone because email is impersonal. Email is just text. It's just characters, and you can say anything you want to them. But if you call and say, hey, you know, can I talk to so-and-so? You know, what's a good time to reach him or whatever? Find out if there's a way to do that. You know, another time to go reach a principal is stop. If you want to stop by the school on a day there aren't students there, when it's a teacher work day, but they might be at conferences or something. I've gone to businesses and said, hey, can I drop this off for so-and-so? It can be a challenge, you know? You guys?
Yeah, man. You're talking to a guy who did this kind of stuff a lot. That's how I got on The Tonight Show, was by sending out okay, so yes to getting on the phone in a big, big way. Nobody wants to do it. That's why it's so valuable. And especially if you can relate to the person individually, treat them like a human being, you could get more information that only makes things make more sense for you to talk to other people. For example, there was a tremendous difference. The first time I tried to get on The Tonight Show, I sent it was the same idea I did both times. I wanted a novel way to make my demo tape stick out from everyone else's, so I bought 30 tubs of Atomic Fireballs from Sam's Club, and I just stuck my VHS tape in all of them, and I stuck on the side, think these are hot, try eating fire, Brian Breastford eats fire and does a bunch of other crazy stunts, check out the tape. And I sent it to, I just went online and I identified 30 shows that I thought I would be a good fit for, and then I called the ticket line for each of them, and I say, and you know, and of course the ticket line is going to answer, and you say, hey, who's the person who's in charge with blankety blank, blank, blank. And so half of them I got names for. The other half I didn't get names. I just wrote attention talent coordinator or whoever books or talent booking or whatever. The second time I did another round and I talked to people and I got the actual name of the talent coordinator at the Tonight Show, and it made a tremendous difference. Rather than saying, hey, slot, this is who this is for. But instead it was the guy's name, and the guy called. He was like, hey, thanks so much. That was really novel. I really enjoyed your tape. You're too weird for us. We'll never have you on. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And then he called back 2 weeks later saying, not that we need you, but if we did, could we? And then once a month they would call saying, not that we need you, but if we did, would you be free? Until finally it ended up happening. Similarly, you know, there was competition reality shows where one thing nobody is able to pass up is the opportunity to accept an award. It doesn't matter how bogus or obviously hilariously fake it is, they're going to accept it. So, you know, if you want to actually talk to, you know, you make up a society, make up an award and give it to, you know, most rad principal award or whatever. And it costs you $15 to get a laser etched little plaque. And again, that changes everything when you talk to a gatekeeper, where it's just like, hey, we had a little popularity thing. It's a silly thing. It's not even a real society, but we made up an award and we want to give it to the principal. When's a good time for me to just come by and drop this off? It's totally silly. It's totally stupid. But we thought it'd be funny if I got a picture of me get handed it off to him. Again, all of this factual, all of this true. You show up and you're like, oh yeah, no, what are we doing? Oh, what do I do? Oh no, I do photography. I do this thing. I do that thing. And, It's your goal is go from pest to welcome guest, and there's a bunch of different ways to do it. Some of them sneaky, some of them less sneaky, but again, you know, yeah. Just don't take no for an answer. You don't have to take no. Somebody tried to tell me no last week. I flew to LA for a meeting that was on the books that everybody agreed. The gatekeeper was the one who he said, here are three choices for this meeting. Pick one. And I did. And I showed up. And a half hour before the meeting, the gatekeeper called and said, yeah, it's not going to work out. It's not going to work out. Can't do it. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know, he's got to leave at some point. I'm here. I'd like to shake his hand or whatever. And he's like, yeah, no, let's just reschedule for June. And it occurred to me like this gatekeeper just had no interest in taking responsibility for everything. Anything I said to him, he was just like, yeah, no, I'm just looking at the schedule. It's really full. And I realized this gatekeeper is not the least bit interested in fixing anything. This gatekeeper is only interested in protecting his own butt and making things easy for himself. So he blames the calendar, and I'm like, that's fine. So I just go there anyway, and I write an email to the guy. I'm like, wow, super busy. I'm downstairs in the bar. I figured I could at least shake your hand on the way out since I flew out here to see you. And then, you know, at that point, that's a different situation where it's like, if there's an apparent sunk cost, and I was fully comfortable if it didn't work out. I had plenty of stuff to do in that area, but just knowing that I was there changed the dynamic and put them in a position where it made more sense to just, you know, at least, you know, they could either be total a-holes or they could, you know, figure a way to get me in there for 15 minutes. And it ended up being extraordinarily valuable.
I would say that, certainly everything has its different risks or things like that. You want to be careful, obviously, with schools and stuff because it's kids and there's things like that. You know, the award thing might work really well, but it might also make it look really weird too. If you're, you know, you got to figure out how will this message you received from me. In the case of this, somebody points out, like, obviously, yeah, you know, their school may have an existing contract, but listen, again, those things get renewed, and if you go in with a better price, you're in a better option. Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I try to do is recruit a champion within an organization, recruit somebody within there that I can get that maybe doesn't have, you know, the approval ability, but has access and can get me access. And so, you know, the problem is like school, like, ah, you know, go to a baseball game, talk to the coach and say, hey, do you want photos for the kids? But that could sound really creepy and weird. But you might be able to say, hey, could we donate, you know, I'm willing to donate, you know, my photography time for an ad in one of the, in the school newspaper, or one of the sports circulars or something like that, say, hey, I'm willing to donate, you know, do photos for one of the teams or something like that in exchange for an ad, which then gets you invited and it gets you in the, it gets you in the building, in the facility, talking to people, having done a favor, and then you can meet the principal. Then you can say, oh yeah, hey, yeah, we're doing this thing for them, or one of some of these other clubs or some academic club or something like that. If you have an interest in, figure out a way to donate a small section of your services for that. That way you're welcome. You're not just a salesman. You're a person who's part of the community and doing something, because then reciprocity can click in. So you might get a teacher or somebody there who then is a champion who will set up that meeting.
Here's the first thing that you need to realize. How do you get to the gatekeeper? First, accurately get past the gatekeeper and get to the decision maker. First, accurately decide who the actual decision maker is. For the Go game, the CEO was the one who signed off on it, or the head of the department was the one who signed off on it. Yeah, they were the one that at the end we would all like cheer and yay and like, thank you for making this happen because we all had such a good time. But it was his assistant that made the call. It was his assistant that found the Go game stuff on Google Ads, right? Like, it was his assistant that did all the work. It's the assistant who decides whether or not he or she are going to recommend this back to the head of the department or the CEO to do the next year. And it's the assistant that's going to have to gather all the feedback to decide whether or not things were good or not. It's the assistant that if you screw up in front of them or make them look awesome, they will feel bound to you and they will want to make this happen easier. It's that person that you needed to salve and you needed to make sure that they were always taken care of if you wanted to get rebooked. So you're looking to right now get past the secretary and get to the principal. My argument would be you might just need to be better friends with that secretary. You might just need to be better about, number one. All right. So here's, in terms of real boots on the ground stuff, the closest equivalent that I could guess is what the Go game did. The Go game invested very, very heavily in Google AdWords because they understood that the path of least resistance is when somebody is like, oh crap, I got to solve this problem. I have no idea where to start. They go to Google and they Google blank in their area to see whatever comes up. My guess is that, as Open Bayou pointed out in the chat room, you're probably facing a war of attrition in terms of there are people who have contracts with schools, yada, yada, yada. Now, none of that is to say that you can't go in and offer a better price. And that, in many ways, can be what your opening is, hey, look, I'd like to just bring in, I know you guys probably have, you know, I want to know whether or not you had an exclusive agreement with somebody. If you do, I would like to just submit my stuff for your records the next time it's up. Or if you don't, then I'd like to bring by my stuff. And that's a reason for you to get in. But I would say, you know, think of the path of least resistance for the person who's going to have to solve this problem. My guess is it's probably not the principal. It probably is the secretary who has to go look for stuff. Or if they feel that, you know, the photographers are, you know, jerks or entitled or bad or people are complaining, or, you know, it's the secretary that has to deal with the angry parent who's calling in to complain about how the photos were late or sucked or something like that, right? And so highlighting, getting her on your side is often better than having a meeting with the principal that you can dazzle with your brilliance, you know, because that secretary's in the principal's ear every single day. You know, there was, for Andrew and I mean, I remember, you know, we wound up having amazing relationships with a lot of our vendors because every Valentine's Day we would get flowers for them, you know? And that was something that, you know, it's little, it's small. It ultimately probably cost us about, you know, $150 a year, maybe in total, to send out 4 sets of flowers to people. And they loved us like family members and would, you know, not do anything to harm us. And those relationships in many ways still continue on. So I would say, number one, understand that it's a war of attrition and you want to have the people that are on the ground fighting for you. Like Andrew said, have an ally on the inside of the building. And number two, once you have them, understanding maintenance on those relationships will be what keeps you in those fields. And number two, you want to capitalize on anybody who is not maintaining those relationships, because that's what will give you the opening to get in the door.
I would think about this too, is that like the photography studios that have those deals will fight and defend those things tooth and nail, tooth and claw, whatever they can. They are going to, because that is a somebody right now is making a good part of their year, you know, of their money doing that, having that relationship with those schools. And I remember, you know, in those things, it's hard to change. That doesn't mean you shouldn't, but also think about different markets too. You know, think about different markets in the sense that, you know, a lot of small businesses never think about, you know, having photos done because everybody thinks that they can do them. But I would be a thing I'd think about, like a lot of these small to medium sized businesses, and say, hey, you know, can I mean,
I would say you could even hit peripherally related markets. For example, I do agree that most schools have some kind of exclusive agreement, but I'm betting that you could work out a deal with the local Cub Scout troops that all go to that school where you go and do photos, you know, because I don't know if Cub Scout photos are even a thing, but you could go and it's like, hey, man, here's a deal that I got. Here's an idea that I have. We'll take photos. It'll be a fundraiser for you. There'll be $20 for a set. $10 of it will be a donation right back directly contributing to your local PAC. $10 will cover my expenses. So it's a fundraiser. And then if you suddenly, let's say you do that for the volleyball group, for the whatever group, whatever, what all the peripherally related stuff, all of a sudden it becomes kind of this checkmate scene where, I mean, literally the kids are seeing you for five of the six photos they get every year. Then you're able to come to in a position of power and say, hey man, I know all these kids. I'm with all these kids. You know, I've taken all these photos. Look at all your students, how much better they look with our service over whoever you're using now, and then figure out a way to go from there.
Yeah, but I would say you could create a new market, like with an actual business that have money and revenue, and say, hey, you know, who does your photos? Like if you go walk into a place like, man, they're not spending photos. And if you can sell the head decision maker on the idea of like, hey, how would you like to have an executive photo session? You know, what's this? Oh, well, you know, you see when people have their bios and this stuff and Forbes and these other places, those are professionally shot photographs. We do that service. You know, we can go into your company. We can do that. We do that for you and we can do it for your employees, obviously for the executives. You know, it's we spend a lot more time. We bring up a makeup person and all that and help that. All of a sudden, you know, you can that's in a market. And that's another market to go into where you can go to businesses that have money and you can sell them the image of themselves looking much more professional. Because if you go to places and you see they have those crappy photos, but it's like, well, yeah, I would love to have a professional photograph, and this is a great way to justify it. So you sell that decision maker there on it, and that could be an entirely different market than just, you know, the existing ones, which, yes, photos of kids, you know, baseball team photos is a thing. That's a done thing. Schools are done photos. But is there something to targeting businesses and saying, let's do executive photography for you?
Well, and let me also just say this. There is a great psychic benefit to just staying busy and getting a yes for something.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and yeah, again, at best, let's say you do 100% of all the right decisions for which only, you know, the universe knows what they are, and you bat 1,000. It's still going to take you years to get a foothold into a school system just because of how that works, right? People only think about that stuff once a year. And so even if you are going to be aggressive and say, yeah, you want to know what? We love you. We hate our current person. We have a contract with them for the next 2 years. But the second that goes, we're going to bring you in. Then you have 2 years where you're sitting around thinking about how you're not working. Yeah, find other sidelines where you can just get something going. Because, man, I think it makes all your decision-making better if you're just keeping busy, keeping that machine humming, man. Idle hands, devil's playground and all that.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, do we want to jump into picks?
Yeah, man, I got a pick. I wonder if I've said this before. I actually don't know. Recently, I was chatting with the lovely and talented Alex Spagnola, and I finally got her on Audible, and I went through my own Audible queue to make recommendations for business books and stuff on psychology and you know, stuff to learn. And I found a book that I was like, wait, did I read that? What don't I remember? And it's fascinating. It's a shorter book. It's an easy, I think, 4.5-hour audiobook read. But really, really good stuff. And it's so funny to go through a book that I definitely read 2 years ago, but I'm constantly convinced as I go through it that I haven't heard this before. And then every single story, I'm like, oh, yeah, it turns out to be this. Oh, yeah, the lesson, the takeaway is that. And you realize how much of it you remember. Anyway, the book is called Sway, S-W-A-Y, and it's by a couple of brothers, I believe. Yeah, Ori Braffman and Ron Braffman. It's about the irresistible pull of irrational behavior, how everyone thinks that we make rational decisions, and of course we don't, and how it affects everything from job interviews to the psychology of selling. Really, really good stuff.
We listen to books differently, Brian.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's a... I can't imagine... I mean, I would be baffled that if I wouldn't realize that I'd read it before or something.
I mean, I do upwards of 50 or 60 nonfiction books a year. So
you multitask when you do them, though.
Yes, correct. Yeah, no, that's the other thing is I do them while I'm doing other things.
Yeah, but I don't consume anywhere near that volume of books. Because I have to focus because I'm even on Audible. I'm out for a walk. I'm rewinding all the time because I'm like, hello, did they say 40 billion or 40 million? You know, did they say Princeton or what did they say? I have to, like, if I don't get the fact, I have to rewind it.
Interesting.
Justin, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. My pick is to remember to plug your sticker site on the other main podcast, which I totally forgot to do. But you can go to Stickers or DIAF. I'm selling sticker packs now. There you go. Buy a sticker pack. It's $5. We are putting in new stickers all the time. You know, this initially was just me trying to move the sticker packs that we had from the live show last week, and they sold so well that I'm just going to keep doing them and keep buying new stickers and putting them in packs. And we got some fun ones, including new Spearmint Nitrate originals coming in the packs that are coming up in the next few weeks. And we're going to get a couple really, really rad diamond ones in there as well. But go ahead and check it out. Stickers or DIAF.
Does that mean that they're going to change what you get?
They will. They will. And what, as soon as I can actually get enough, like basically right now, I've just been trying to play catch up on filling stuff that is already in there, and I'm ordering new ones. But as soon as I get the next set that I'm going to sell or that are going to go out, I'll have right below the buy button what is in the pack right now. Mm. So people can very clearly say, okay, well, if you know, either this is the majority stuff that I already have or it's new stuff and I want to buy it. So it'll be very, very easy on the site to understand what is going to be there. But the goal is that, you know, that every 3 or 4 months or so, it'll just be a totally new pack.
Is that your phone number right there on the site?
It is my Google Voice number.
Yeah, I know.
yeah, not my real phone number, which I tweeted out during the live show last week. And thankfully, that wasn't a terrible thing.
So far.
Hello, Justin. How are you doing?
In Magic, there are people like you sometimes want to avoid calling because what they'll do is they'll get you on the phone for 8 hours. I've got a pick. And here's the funny thing. I have one problem with the pick is that it is an extremely thoughtful, intelligent, well-presented book. Very much, you know, kind of about achievement and getting things done. It crosses the gambit of advice from public speaking to persuasion and goal setting versus actually I'll get into that in a second. And it's by somebody I think is a very smart person who I've enjoyed listening to. I don't always agree with, but I think is very intelligent. I think the name is horrible because I can never remember the name of the book. And I've been many times like, oh yeah, have you checked out the book by, hold on, let me pull it up on Audible and pull up. Oh yeah, that's the name of the book. And the book I'm talking about is by Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert. And it's How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big, kind of the story of my life. Okay? So you've got fail, almost everything, win big, story of my, you've got all these things in there. And I can never, I'm like, is it like failure way to success? Is it this? It's that? I think it's a horrible name. It's a horrible, horrible name for the book because I can't, and granted, I'm an idiot, but I cannot remember the name of the book. And other than the name of the book, it's a great book. And Adams gets into explaining, you know, his pathway to success. He has an entire chapter listing every single business idea he ever tried and attempted and failed at. And it is huge. And you realize this is a guy that kept trying for success and kept trying a bunch of different things. But along the way, acquired skills, insight, knowledge, and was really in a good position when Dilbert started to become popular to be able to capitalize on that. Some of the favorite takeaways from there are he says goals are for losers, systems are for winners. The difference between goals and systems. And explains how a system is really the pathway to success versus a goal. Now, he gets into things like affirmations, but that's very different than a goal. An affirmation is just a thing that you know, and I would say that some people might, you could argue like, well, your affirmations sound a lot like goals, but his argument is the way he achieves the success is a system, not say, if you want to get to someplace, you have to have things you do every day that are going to get you there. He talks about these passions bull. He doesn't believe in passion. He believes in energy. The amount of energy you bring to a project is what will carry it through. He talks about how, you know, working in banking, you know, one of the pieces of advice that he had got was, if somebody comes to you and says, well, my passion is to start this restaurant, my passion is to do this, or my dream is to do that, no, don't give them the money. When somebody comes into you with a bunch of energy and excitement about a spreadsheet or like, look at this, this is why this is a great business, that's who you bet on. He talks about how every mediocre skill you add makes you increasingly more valuable, and the advantages of that being a slightly better public speaker, slightly better at accounting, slightly better at software, all of a sudden adds together where you're way ahead of everybody else. And he gets into like luck management, odds, his affirmation stuff. I think it's a little bit weird. He explains like, you know, it might be him. I can explain probably why his affirmations worked. But and anyhow, a really compelling book so far. I highly recommend it, even though I can't remember the name of How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big.
Right on.
Buying it now.
Yep. I think it's a lot of relatability because you realize here's a guy that sits on top of a very interesting empire who tried a bunch of different things. There's a guy that was a schemer, full of schemes. There's my scheme to do this. This was going to be this. This was going to be that. And then after he became very successful, things that did and did not work for him. So, all right. You guys, you feel sated? You feel like you've
got it? I feel like we changed some lives today. I feel like we've made all right with the universe.
I think so. I think we're ready. I think we're riding into Valhalla.
Well, I'm ordering a sticker pack right now. So, that's all I've got to say. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.